Hello and welcome to the CG Garage, episode number 10, brought to you by Chaos Group. This episode features Important Looking Pirates, a visual effects company out of Stockholm, Sweden. Two guys, Nicholas Jakobsen and Måns Björklund, happened to be here for the VS Awards. They were nominated for their work they did on Crossbones, which is really cool, and we'll put a link up to that on the page, so check it out. They've been around for a while, and I've actually been in touch with them for over a year about different projects they've done, and they're really, really cool to share their work and be really great with us. So I was super excited to find out they're going to be in LA. It's a perfect opportunity for us to get to see each other and say hi, and a podcast was just the perfect way to do that. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it as much as I did.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
What, when I was in, I've listened to a lot of The Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, and I realized that most people in Sweden, according to this book, they drink coffee and eat sandwiches.
No, I think coffee is for sure a big part of. I think we are the biggest consumers in the world of coffee.
Really? Yeah. Per capita.
And I mean, which makes sense. We have these mandatory fika breaks, like when you have coffee at work and stuff. And yeah, we're big fans.
Right.
And I guess.
I think you're actually entitled by law at least 15 minutes in the morning and in the afternoon. So that's half an hour at least that you're. By law, you should have your coffee.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. You guys flew in on Sunday.
Yep.
And you guys were here for a while, so you got a little bit of rest before the VES.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And where are you guys staying again?
In Venice.
In Venice.
Yeah.
And you guys get like a bed and breakfast down there or something, right?
It's an Airbnb.
We're
renting a little house there.
So, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's it? How's Venice? It's pretty nice now, right?
Yeah,
now.
No, it's awesome. And I mean, I like that side of LA, Santa Monica and Venice and stuff. So, and was there on vacation a few weeks ago or a few months ago as well.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah.
Well, it's a little different from Sweden right now, I'm sure.
It is.
Yeah. I had a run early yesterday morning and then had a swim in the ocean. It was like regular temperature, Swedish summer.
Right. Tell me a little bit about Important Looking Pirates and where did that start? I mean, how did that happen? Because you guys came from VFX before that.
Yeah.
You had your own thing. Because I remember we did a story about you guys. So what was your background, Nicholas?
Well, Jaffe and my co-founder and I, we worked together in Sweden. And, and we moved to London at the same time in 2003.
Okay.
And joined the blooming industry there. I mean, a lot of stuff was going on and Harry Potter and all that kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very interesting time to go there. And Jaffe worked with the commercials at Glassworks, and I joined Double Negative for feature film work.
Okay.
And yeah, it was extremely exciting times. We spent a few years there, and then I moved back to Sweden to my girlfriend.
Yeah.
And Jaffe went to Los Angeles to start a 3D department for Brickyard VFX.
Okay, right in Santa Monica, right?
In Santa Monica, And so that's and he did that for 2 years, and I was going a little bit back and forth between Sweden and doing work there and Double Negative.
Mm-hmm.
And but then we came together and started to talk in the summer of 2007 about he'd been on the road for a long time, and we felt that it would be great to get back to your roots, but at the same time we still wanted to do the same kind of work, and we were very inspired by the industry. abroad because it was so developed. It was more Wild West in Sweden at the time.
Sure.
So much stuff was time and efforts were put into research and development and pipeline work, and we wanted to do that, and we wanted to compete with the best companies out there. So
right.
And yeah, so that's, we started our own company and trying to do this. So,
and why did you come up with the name?
That's a reference from an old 19th adventure game called Monkey Island.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, we are nerds. What can I say?
Yeah. Monkey Island.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. So, and then how long ago did that start?
So that was, we started the company in October 2007. So we've been going on for a little bit over 7 years now.
Okay.
And we started four people in a 400 square meter big office. So we were determined to succeed
right
early on. And no, it was great. And we grew quite quickly.
Yeah.
And hired old friends and people we loved to work with that we've been working with before.
So did you go to see some of your friends that were in London and say, hey, do you want to move back to Sweden with us?
That happened eventually. But at the time, we started with our friends in Sweden that were working on these other places and just told them about our vision that we wanted to do this, but we wanted to do it proper, like they've been doing in LA and London.
So you'd almost see like your time in those other studios as your training to how to set up the way you guys want to do it.
And open the eyes and really inspiring. And that was definitely something we took a lot of inspiration from. And
who were some of your mentors, would you say?
From my time in Double Negative, I had so many good people that I worked with. And Paul Franklin, of course, was supervising the work we did for Batman Begins.
Right.
And I worked close with a lot of people, David Vickery, and a lot of nice people that are, they're doing well at Double Negative.
Yeah, they are doing well. That's great.
So, yeah, so many great people, and I'm really happy about my time there. So.
And what was your focus there when you were, what were you?
I was a lead lighting artist, and I did a little bit of generalist stuff as well.
Okay.
So that was.
And then so now obviously you've started this company. Are you? What is your title officially?
I'm a VFX supervisor, but also CEO. We're doing it, but we're an artist-driven company, so it's not your general business CEO kind of style.
Right. Well, no, of course, but the projects you work on, you were mentioning to me earlier months that they're basically a lot of the projects you're working on are not necessarily in Sweden. Most of the work you're doing is outside of Sweden now.
Last year it was like 80%.
Mm-hmm.
80%?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and what kind of projects are you working on now, would you say? What is your main thing?
At the moment, it has been TV series, as you know.
TV series, yeah.
Yeah, Constantine, and previous to that was Crossbones.
Right.
Which kept us busy more or less the last year,
2014.
Apart from that, commercials, a little bit of feature film.
And you're doing commercials, again, outside of Sweden as well?
Yes.
So what kind of markets are you going to? What other countries are you working with specifically?
I would say mainly US.
Wow, okay.
And then the UK, a little bit of Germany.
Okay.
Brazil, I've started working with as well. We had done some work for Taiwan, I think, but it was back
China.
Into China.
Right.
And, we're trying to be everywhere, I would say.
That's a cool thing with, today that it's quite easy to work across the globe.
Right. It is nice. And so what is the struggle? I think that a lot of people think about the struggle is that is your time zones, right?
Mm.
But how do you guys manage that? How do you guys share your work? And what is your process of doing that?
I mean, it works quite all right. I mean, we're doing a lot of Skypes, and usually you can find that hour when someone wakes up and just before we go home,
right?
And you can have the time to do the Skype face to face call. But also we could just send the work in progress in the evening before we go home, and we have the feedback done in our mailboxes in the morning as
that
well.
That is so one thing. I definitely like when I was doing some projects with some guys in France, and I would basically say, here are my notes, and then the next day I'll come in and it's done.
It works great.
And I think it's also when you get used to it, you get better at it, of course.
Right.
And then you develop even more and do it faster. And as Niklas say, we get a great amount of iterations.
Right.
Because we have it in the mailbox in the morning. So.
Right, exactly. So you're able to go through it. And what? How is your infrastructure? Do you guys have a big render farm that you manage and everything else?
Yeah, we do have a big render farm. And that's something that it's one of the things that we looked into the bigger companies. There is a certain infrastructure that you really need.
Mm-hmm.
We have always been, you know, not afraid of putting down time and money into research or pipeline work and
sure.
or software developing and of course render farms, all of these things. Since we have an artist background,
right.
we kind of need or we kind of know what you need in order to do your thing. So
yeah. I always found it very interesting. There's certain mentalities where some people don't necessarily feel that they want to invest in the technology as much as the people, but if you don't support the people with a lot of exactly. technology, they can't do their job.
Yeah. Mm.
And sometimes I've seen people where they actually have much smaller studios and a lot of technology, a lot of computer power, be it however they're going to do it. And suddenly when they're doing that, the artists are so much more efficient and you get so much more work out of it because the artist's time is probably your most expensive thing.
Salaries are the most expensive.
A computer is cheap.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then it just comes a matter of cooling. But I guess in Sweden, you just have to open the windows.
During the winter.
Yeah. There was a friend of mine I knew. He was working somewhere in northern Canada. It was really cool. And goes, yeah, we literally just opened the windows one day. Well, that's interesting. I think it's really amazing that you guys are doing such incredible work. And of course, your background shows where that comes from. What are some of the things that you guys are obviously known for? First thing is, you know, you've done some amazing stuff with sharks, and you guys. I think that stuck, and a lot of people was like, "Oh, we gotta go to those guys to do some sharks."
Yeah.
So tell me about some of the shark stuff that you guys have done.
Oh, we've been doing. It started with Contiki.
Well, tell me a little bit about Contiki. Yeah. Tell the audience about it.
Yeah, so that is a Norwegian feature film that was released in 2011, I believe.
Okay,
and it's based on a real story of Thor Heyerdahl who sailed. He built a wood raft and sailed over the Pacific.
Okay.
To prove that Polynesia was populated by South American and from South America, not from Asia, which was believed at the time. So it's an awesome story, and it was a fantastic project for us, and we got to do the sharks was the big part of our work, and of course that includes water work, something that we've been doing quite a lot as well.
Right. Well, we'll get into the water work sure, because I think that's really fascinating. But the shark stuff was you guys did really amazing stuff on. Do you guys do it because you've done so many shark projects? Have you done a lot of research in sharks?
Yeah, it's always. Yes. Yeah, that's how you start.
Right.
Terabytes of reference movies on the server.
But it always starts like that. And that's the thing. I'm so happy that we got the chance to work on this project because we didn't have any proven track record in creature animation or anything like that. But but we believe that it's just about good taste in a way. I mean, in doing good work. So it wasn't like we were terrified of digging into that kind of work. We just, you study references, you do your homework, and then you just have great people creating this stuff. So.
And then you mentioned also that you said you're doing a lot of stuff with Fluid, but you guys wrote your own Fluid Sim and Fluid Renderer. I mean,
So we have a volumetric renderer which we use for volumetrics and particles.
Okay. And does that include the water surfacing?
Not the water surface. We do support geometry for catching reflections and shadows and stuff, but it was mainly for the pure like volumetrics and particles.
Interesting. Yeah. And what drove you to do that as opposed to using other products?
At the time, we were a small company. We were probably about 10 people when we started doing that, which is kind of crazy in a way.
And you have your own developers that do that as well?
Yeah. So, But the reason was that, there was no competition at the time. Rendaman was very, very, very expensive. We just couldn't afford buying, the amount of, at the time. And and we had the people in our close, in our, we knew the people that were able to do this. So we thought, like, why not? Let's do this.
And what's the name of your renderer?
Tempest,
okay. Yeah. Oh, cool. And so you guys used that. Now, the best example I've seen of that is in Crossbones so far. And obviously that you guys just – obviously the reason you guys are here is because of the VES Awards and for what the work you did on Crossbones, which is incredible. So we're going to put a link up to your making of, which is incredible.
Awesome.
And
thanks.
We'll put that up there on the podcast.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about the project. How did it come in and how did you guys get involved with it and some of the work that was involved?
It's funny because it was because the overall VFX supervisor Kevin Blank, he had seen the breakdown of Contiki.
Ah, okay.
So and he said, "Yeah, I need to work with this guy sometime." And then he contacted us regarding Crossbones, as I remember it.
Yeah. No.
And so when was this?
It must be late 2013.
We started production in December and it was quite quick, the process from the first call to when we actually started working on the show.
Right.
And so
how many episodes were you guys working on? How many?
Six in total
and about 100 shots it ended up in the end with our
so
work.
Total shots. Yeah. It was about 100 shots. Yeah. And you guys did a lot of ship work.
A lot of ship work.
And tell me a little bit about the process of doing those ships and what that was involved in that.
Yeah, so we knew that we were gonna do the ships, and we had four hero ships that we did, and then we made alterations of additional ships, and we had a nice and a good pre-production. I mean, we had quite a long time thought of doing that, and that was really important. And Kevin also said that. It's going to be important to be able to when we go in shot production, keep the cost down as much as possible.
Sure.
And it's so much more efficient to put a proper time into pre-production and making your ships hold up really well, figuring out all this stuff. If you can cut a day off in shot production, you will save a lot of money in the end. So
absolutely.
A solid development and a small team during that time period enable us to chunk out shots quite quickly and cost effective in the end.
Yeah, obviously the modeling and the texturing and design of the ships are extremely elaborate, really beautiful. But you guys, there was a lot of sim that was going on as well, right? So the cloth sim, the way that all of that was working with the sails, how did you guys accomplish that? Was that done inside of Maya or?
Yeah, all the cloth was done in Maya.
Okay, with the standard Maya.
End cloth. Yeah,
nice.
It was all done in Maya. And the water work was done in Houdini.
Oh, okay.
And then exported as meshes back into Maya for rendering. V-Ray, yeah.
Okay. So you rendered the water in V-Ray, but then the volumetric stuff was rendered with your
exactly.
own stuff.
Exactly.
So a lot of the splashing, the smoke, the fire.
Exactly. That was rendered with the Tempest, but the rest, all the beauty, the ships, water, and the base of the shot was all V-Ray.
Okay. And you guys do a lot of Houdini as well now, because obviously you're doing a lot of effects work. How many do you guys, or is everyone kind of, or is most of your team sort of generalist and then do a little Houdini, a little Maya, or do you have like Houdini guys and Maya guys?
We do have Houdini guys, but in general, we have a lot of generalists. We think that's great. It's a great way to, utilize our time as best as possible. And we're a small team, so you kind of need to be able to do a wide variety of tasks.
Sure.
So we've always liked generalist and have that. But for the most difficult effects work, we have dedicated Houdini artists as well.
Okay.
But yeah.
And do you guys hire freelancers as well on top when you guys get big, or do you have, like you said, about 20 artists? Is that what you said?
We're actually much more now.
Oh, really? How big are you guys now?
We're 40 in total. I would say. Yeah.
It's in the same 400 square meter space?
No, no, we have moved since. You moved? But yeah, it's getting crowded where we are now as well. So
yeah.
But yeah, no, and 40 permanent staff. And how many of those are artists? 25 maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that?
25, 30, yep. Something like that.
Okay. Wow.
And we like permanent staff. We like we have a nice culture and great people, and we like getting to know people and working with them.
Sure.
So that's we have always preferred that over over growing with freelancers, but of course we do that when
you have to. I mean, you can't always keep the staff, you also have to be able to expand your work, and you have ups and downs.
Yeah.
So I don't remember if we covered how long did it take you guys to work on all of that stuff from Crossbones approximately?
And we started early December with pre-production, and I think short production started March or February.
So that is a good three or four months of pre-production.
Yeah.
But as Niklas just said, we had a very small team on it. I would think we were seven,
I believe.
Five to seven people.
And it was mostly just making sure that the pipeline was working.
Everything was working. We did lots of animation cycles and things, and prepping the ships and the sails and doing all the look development and during that time period. So when we came to shot production in March, and the last shots delivered in mid-June, but things were, we grew the team to about 15 people, I believe, and we were able to do two shots.
So everything was about 15 people, that's the maximum?
Yeah, I believe
Wow, that's awesome. Hmm?
Yeah. But I think we have, as Niklas says, it's great when you have a tight team and, permanent staff, everyone knows each other.
I would much rather hire people that are more expensive and a lot fewer of them. Mm-hmm. And people that I know, it's like, I know I can trust this person and I don't have to train 25 people that are barely know what they're doing. And so when you have a good team and you're meshed really well, it's amazing how much work you can get done out of that. That's really cool. And how big were those ships? They must have been pretty massive in terms of, because I saw
the biggest one were like 100 meters long or something, almost like 300 feet.
There's a huge amount of modeling.
A lot of modeling we have great artists to accomplish that. And
you guys modeled it in Maya, or was there some ZBrush and other sculpting as well?
We use ZBrush and Mudbox as well.
Okay.
And just for additional detailing and stuff like that. But it was,
And you had also, Maya. And you had a lot of characters in there as well.
Yeah.
I saw a couple of people walking around. And so you did you guys do the motion capture and swing?
No, we didn't. Okay. We actually hand animated them. A little bit crazy.
Really?
Yeah, it's keyframed. All of the crew.
We're a bit crazy like that.
Yeah, but it worked out and it was really nice.
That's amazing.
We will definitely look into motion capture as well. But we have great animators as well.
That is really good animation considering you guys keyframed it. That says a lot, actually, because I was looking, it's like, oh, wow, look, you just put you guys animated it. Wow. That's really good. It reminded me a lot of when I was at last year, I was at Trojan Horse was a Unicorn, which is a conference in Portugal. And a friend of mine who I'd work with on iRobot, his name is Andy Jones, and he was there, and he was telling the story about one of his first animations, which was animating the people on the Titanic. Mm, and so it's a lot of that similar thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I remember him talking about that. I was like, oh, this reminds me of the Titanic stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
So yeah, it was really cool. And you guys, again, the people were very detailed as well.
Yeah, fair. I mean, in our breakdown, we have a few shots of them close up, and you can see that they don't hold up, but they were never intended for
no, they were background close. People.
Yeah, they were background people. So yeah, they served this purpose well.
Yeah, and then you guys also, I've seen, I mean, based on what I saw on Contiki as well as what I saw on there, there's a lot of really great compositing you guys do. What's your main compositing process?
We're using Nuke.
Okay.
That's our main compositor, and that's the thing. A lot of the shots in Crossbones was composited by the 3D artists as well.
The
lighters were compositing their own shots. Yeah. So
right. So you don't have a separate 2D.
We do.
You
we
do,
do
yeah. but not.
It's a slightly smaller scale to our 2D dedicated 2D department.
Right.
And with awesome artists as well. But yeah, no, we are generalist, and we feel like compositing your own CG is a part of the job, because
it also makes things simpler, yeah. Right? Because you already, you're giving yourself the elements, so yeah. You know what
yeah,
you need.
Exactly. No, it is yeah. For sure.
So you just like, you know what, I need this, and then you just do that, and then you can make it work. So it's pretty interesting.
And it's also really great for the artist to sort of start and finish the shot. It's, you know.
Yes, it's nice. It's a nice feeling when you final your own shot that you've been working on in 3D. But one of the things, since you guys do a lot of stuff with water, obviously, on Kon-Tiki and on this project, compositing with water is kind of hard. What are some of the challenges? Like, how do you guys deal with like green screens and stuff like that? Or how, is it a lot of roto? Do you have big rotos?
We prefer rotos in a way. Green screen is always green screen, and it's so hard, you know, to match lighting sometimes if it's shot in a studio, for example. Kon-Tiki was all shot out in the Mediterranean and in a tank. Yeah, in a tank, but outdoors. And that just, I'd choose roto any day before green screen compositing, just because for the lighting, to make the shot.
Of course, you don't want to deal with spill and
it's
all.
It's so much harder to just, you can often see that the people, it's hard to light people for outdoor environments. And you'll have a tougher time making them look sitting in an outdoor environment than roto or... Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and it's also things, you know, if you're dealing with weird transparencies and stuff, it becomes a little bit more challenging when you're doing that.
Yeah, of course.
So, that's very, very true. So after Crossbones, which was, again, really great, you guys moved to Constantine after that.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about Constantine.
That's what has been a fantastic project as well. Very different in a way from Crossbones. Crossbones, we had long pre-production and did a lot of similar shots. Mm-hmm. And Constantine, it's faster paced because there is a new creature, a new effect that needs to be developed for every new episode.
Right.
So that was also really fun. A lot of variations. You got to work on a wide variety of things, and we kept working together with Kevin Blank, who was the overall supervisor for that show as well.
Okay. And so that's you have a good relationship.
Yeah,
with
great
him.
Relationships. Yes. It's so important, I believe. In
absolutely,
order to
absolutely, because then there's a trust and a language that develops.
Sure. Yeah. For sure.
And he's based in Los Angeles.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so Constantine is how many shots or episodes have you guys worked on there?
I think it's 9 now or something like that.
Are you guys still doing stuff?
We're actually finishing today.
Yeah. The last bits. We got a sneak peek during sound edit of the season finale yesterday.
Okay.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
It varied in between the episodes. The most shot intensive was episode 2, I believe. We did 67 shots.
Wow.
And then it averaged between, I would say, 30 and 20 for the episode that had not so many effects shots, but somewhere in between 20 and 60.
And you were telling me, Mons, that basically everything you did was a little bit different as opposed to Crossbones. So what are some of the different things that you guys were doing on there?
We did a lot of smoke, demons. Smoke demons, and we did beetles. What else we did?
Yeah, we did a good mix of effects work and magics and things like that, and creature work, which was really, really fun.
Right.
And we did some really fun creature work for episode 9 with the Invunch.
Okay.
Which is a demon monster that is very scary and cool looking.
Right. Actually, when the first time I got in touch with you, you were looking at a couple of different things. And one of the things I remember very, very clearly, I want to go back to, is the CG baby you guys did.
Yes.
That was an awesome shot. So I remember you telling me how you did it or why you did it the way they did it or why I should. So can you break it down for people to understand that the baby thing or explain to them why it was done the way it was done?
It was a time freeze shot. You know, they froze the time, and we had and they shot it on set, and they had a a little doll or something. Yes, because yeah, well, it's hard to get a baby to act like
right.
to freeze. Like, hey, please right. just stand still for a minute.
So it was shot. Basically, they didn't actually do like a bullet time.
No, exactly.
So they did it. They said everyone to hold still.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they basically said, well, we need a baby yeah. because that's the only thing that we can't get yeah, to hold still.
Exactly.
And so you guys did the baby. So mm-hmm. tell me about a little bit of how much time it took or what reference you used or all that stuff.
I'm not sure exactly how long time it took.
It was a commercial project, so it wasn't, you know, super long.
Right.
I think it, in total, I guess 3 to 4 weeks yeah. at the most.
Sounds about right. right.
But that was, you know, from starting to ending it.
Right. And most of that was probably making sure you get reference of the baby yeah. and stuff
yes,
like that.
I think, and but as I remember, really loved the V-Ray shading.
Yeah, that was oh, yeah? we did the beta 3.0, I believe, for that
oh, really?
Project. Yeah, and with their new subsurface uh-huh. shader stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know you guys used yeah. the new beta on that one. That
we did the beta for Crossbones as well.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right,
no,
right,
it was
right.
all. And I talked with the guys about that at the Chaos Group.
Yeah.
And I was like, is it, can we use this for, we have a big project that we
right.
want to really try this on.
Yeah.
And is it stable? And they said, yeah, sure, go ahead. So
yeah.
we just launched that on the beta version of V-Ray.
I'm so used to, you know, but I always used whatever latest mm. was mm-hmm. always available. And it's, you know, it's very few times that I find that there was a bad crash.
Mm.
And usually the other thing I like is when there is a bad crash, it's usually fixed in
yeah.
like a day or two because
yeah.
they're very quick about fixing stuff. But yeah, it's cool that you guys were using the 3.0 beta because that was a lot of, you know, the thing about especially 3.0 is that that version, more than anything, we talked about it with Vlado when he was here. That version, more than anything, was really mostly driven by feedback from artists and studios. It was about what they wanted and how they did it. So a lot of the speed improvements were actually very specifically done on the fact that we had scenes from clients. We benchmarked
yeah.
specific stuff that people were doing to see what we could do to accelerate it. So just the raw ray tracing acceleration was driven by actual quality work they were doing. So when you guys are out there testing the stuff, it makes everything better for us. So it was really cool that happened. But I remember, yeah, that baby was really cool. And the fact that you were using the new skin was a really important thing. And did you guys was there an HDR you guys shot on set as well? And you guys did all the lighting there? Or did you just match the lighting by eye?
No, I believe it was HDR.
Yeah.
I didn't supervise that project,
okay.
so I'm not totally sure. It was.
No, it was.
Yeah, HDR on set, and then and modeling, Madbox for detailing it up, and then great look development. And yeah.
Okay, cool. So what are some of the other projects? So where do you guys want to go? What's your 5-year plan?
Ooh, that's we can't talk about that.
No, well, we can't.
We are in a very nice place now. We have grown to a size which we feel comfortable with. We have always wanted.
You don't really
want to
grow much more than this.
We want to grow if it's appropriate for the projects that we get. But we have always wanted to be somewhere around where we are now in order to take on a sequence from a movie
mm-hmm.
at the same time as we're keeping our commercial department.
Right,
and so we have always wanted that kind of split, 50-50, or if it's 40-60, something. Just
sure.
a mix of long-term projects, which is great to know that you have stuff to do. And it's very exciting, of course, working with story-driven VFX, but also commercials, because commercials is the best school for learning 3D. You get
Absolutely.
To try so much a wide variety of stuff, and it's some very demanding and really cool looking projects as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we've always wanted that split and never want to focus on one thing only. I mean, we like a lot of things. We're doing games stuff as well.
Oh, really?
And yeah. So yeah, we've always been open to explore and, you know, test different things and just like creating stuff in general.
Yeah.
So
right.
Yeah, we deliver content. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing now, right? It's all about content delivery and people seeing things that people want to see. And I think that, you know, commercials are changing a little bit because it's people are seeing it in a much wider audience because it's available to people in a lot of different ways. So it's not just like, you know, just for this market, see this. I think a lot of people can see a lot of the great content out there. Are you guys ever planning to do some of your own content or some of your own projects?
We actually have two short films that we're working on.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Can you mention anything about them?
Yeah, of course. One of them is our animation supervisor, Niklas Andersson, who is directing. It's his short film. He started working on it a long time ago as a side project. Then he contacted us and we worked together in London. So I knew him from my time in London.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, like, hey, I have this animated short film.
Yeah.
And we were really inspired. It looks so cool. He's such a great animator. And we just wanted to, we would love to help you finishing this.
Right.
So we're doing the look development and lighting and rendering. And that one is about 50% there. We're close to ready for shot production. We've been working on look development and stuff. We're really excited about that short film.
When do you anticipate it to come out?
That's the thing. It's hard to plan since we're working on it in between projects and stuff.
Yeah.
But we have been thinking about accelerating and focusing a little bit more on those special projects.
Sure.
Just to make sure that they really get out.
Yeah. What's the name of it? Can you say the name?
The Big Step.
The Big Step.
Yep.
Okay.
It's a very nice story and it's going to be a lot of eye candy as well. It looks really, really cool.
Cool.
I believe you have done some coverage or you have talked about it, Chaos Group.
Probably. Yeah.
And then we have another one that is earlier in production, working title The Man and the Fish.
Okay.
And that is, we're doing concepts now, we're modeling the characters, doing blend shapes and prepping. We're doing previs. That story is. It's a Swedish, quite famous Swedish director called Josef Fares, who's writing the script for this one.
Oh, okay.
And it's a nice, warm story about relationship, and that one is going to be super fun as well.
And how long are the shorts going to be approximately?
We hope to get out by the end of 2016.
Okay.
The quality and just making it what we want it to be is most important. So we will do.
You give it justice.
It needs to.
Yeah.
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 Well, that's the most important.
So, but yeah, we love things like that. We just like doing what we want to. And that's, I guess, the advantage with running your own company. You get to choose.
Yes. You can choose what you want to work on. Mm. Yeah. That's really kind of cool. So, what is it now? How long? You'll say. So you started in you started a company in Sweden. What did you say?
2007.
So now we're looking at seven years.
Eighth year.
How after 8 years? How do you feel about things? I mean, like, where do you feel like you've gotten at this point? You feel pretty established.
We're very happy. We are where we set out to be. I mean, today, now that we're here in LA and for the nomination of our work, so we're really happy and feel that we have accomplished the first set of goals is to,
to
establish our company and to compete with the best international studios. So we're in a very good place, and we're super excited about the future as well. So many interesting projects, and we've met a lot of interesting people here, of course, and talked about future work. And so the future is looking bright, and we're eager to get back home to work.
And so who's managing the office while you guys are
the rest of the guys? They're doing fine.
And you guys you were saying you were probably thinking, because you're doing a lot of work in the U.S. now, you have to travel here a lot more, don't you, every now and then? Or are you guys able to do most of it over the Skype and stuff?
I think we can do most over the Skype. But on the other hand, it's very nice getting some face-to-face time with the clients and meeting people. So I think we probably will go here at least once a year to meet, focus on meeting people. And but we'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah, well, you definitely should stop by and say hello when you come here, because it's been great. I was I was so excited to hear that you guys, one, that you guys were nominated, and then two, is like, oh, wait, that means they're going to probably be in LA. So, so I was really, because I know the opportunity, like, again, to talk to you and to be able to do that, it's like, that's the thing, right? So it's just like, the reason I was saying that is, if you're now in LA, now we get to meet each other, we get to do a podcast, we get to do whatever, and it makes a difference, I think, when you see people. And then the next time you call on Skype, it's a different conversation because you've already seen the person and you know who they are and what's going on. And your work is great. Obviously, we've talked about it a lot and what you're doing. What actually led you to V-Ray? Had you guys used it before? Or?
So we were switching away from Pixar Strandman at the time, because we wanted to have something a little bit straight from the box, easier. I mean, it took some time actually to get the artist to learn it, of course, and it was very expensive as well.
Right.
So we did an evaluation of the competition by the time, and we really felt for V-Ray. It did exactly what we wanted it to do. It was quick. You could very quickly get to a very nice state with your shots, that was the reason, just to simplify the work, and of course pricing has been great as well.
Yeah. Mm.
And this was like 2010 or something.
When you started
when we switched to somewhere around there.
I remember when I started, one of the first projects was doing it in V-Ray.
Mm? Yeah. Well, so when did you start? You started in 2010, and what was your position then? What were you doing?
Producing.
Right.
Producer. I'm formerly a CG artist, so I know the backbone.
Well, that's good. It helps. You can have the right conversation. So where were you a CG artist?
Mainly in Stockholm. Okay. You know, a lot of different places, starting out in 96, doing CG. So, yeah, but then I found these guys and you know, happily marriage ever since.
That's good. That's great. Let's see. How far are we? We're in good shape. What do you see as the next step in CG? Where do you think it's going to go? What are the things you're looking forward to?
Oh man, it's a interesting question. There's a lot of stuff going on. Just that all softwares and things are getting more accessible and are improving a lot. It's easier and easier to create content.
Sure.
And so, which is, that's very exciting, of course. And as I said, we're also doing, we're working with games. That's something that we think is very fascinating as well to see, because the worlds are quickly coming closer to each other. Yep. I mean, the game starts to look super fantastic, and so that fusion, I think, is going to be interesting. And there's so much things to look forward for in the future.
But I mean, do you feel that that there's going to be a different types of content that you're going to start focusing on? Do you think you're going to be looking at different ideas, or do you think that like, for example, we've been doing a lot of stuff with some people that are looking into VR work and stuff like that. So I'm wondering if you guys have started thinking about that type of ideas.
That is something that is really interesting.
Right.
I can't wait till they actually release the commercial versions of Oculus and Morpheus and now Microsoft's take on it. And I'm really excited about that. We don't have any roadmap on exactly
what that means.
What that means, but sure. We're open-minded. We would love to play around with things like that, but the general goal is just to create cool content and nice images. Sure. So, and for whatever platform that will be,
it's going to be needed all over.
And what is your take on cloud rendering?
That is also something that we think is the future, like terminals in general. You shouldn't have to have all the hardwares on your location. We have started to put a lot of our tech in a co-location, so it's not in our office, and that has been really, really good because we're almost out of power and cooling in our building. So that has been really exciting, and the next step is to moving the workstations out from the office as well, so you should be able to work accessing everything that you have, your work environment, your workstation from home or from wherever you are.
Sure.
That's something that is really interesting. And of course, cloud rendering is something that, it is the future. It doesn't make sense to host all this technology.
What do you think some of the challenges are to get there?
The bandwidth is the big challenge right now, I would say, because there are a lot of great services, and the problem is some of the scenes that you're working on, they're so heavy. There's a bunch of geometry and simulation data, and just the data, sending it around, to different co-locations and stuff, is the big challenge, I would say.
But Sweden's bandwidth, general bandwidth, is pretty good.
It is great, for sure. But still, the scenes can be horrendous. I mean, it can be really, really big, especially if you're going down the water lane and doing effects work and
Sims
simulations
can take a huge,
and particles and can be naughty in size.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because I think that's something we need to sort of look at. I mean, how do you deal with that? Mm-hmm. So one thing you could possibly do is not have your Sims, do your Sims on the cloud as well, and then the Sims are already there.
For sure.
Right? So that's an idea, obviously, but that becomes a challenge. So how do you process all of that information? Because I think there's a lot of good things about cloud stuff that's going on. I really want to know how studios are preparing for it, or what are their considerations, or what are their concerns. You know, some people, your concern is very even with the good bandwidth.
Yeah.
You still are worried about how much you need, right?
Mm.
But other studios, for example, it's like, well, movie, the MPAA will never allow you to render on the cloud.
Mm, yeah,
that's a huge concern.
Yeah,
But I think it's interesting is that I was talking to our CEO and he was mentioning some, basically, at the end of the day, you're only as secure as whoever is maintaining your server room.
For sure. And it makes more sense to have one location that there is hosting that you need to secure, rather than every company doing their own audits and or whatnot, and securing their infrastructure. It's very expensive.
That's an excellent point. If there's one location that's certified and ready to go, then everyone can use that service, and then it's just they pay as they go. That's an excellent point. Audits were horrible. I went through a couple of them, and I just going through, disconnect that thing, do this, do that. So you guys haven't had to go through any audits.
No, not yet, but it's probably likely to happen sooner or later, working with bigger projects and things like that. So,
and was the Crossbones and Constantine, those were the first two episodic stuff that you've done? And you guys kept planning on doing more episodic work at this point?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we'd love to do that. Yeah, it's been super fun. And I think it's a very nice hybrid between the high-end Hollywood blockbuster stuff and, so it's a nice pacing. You get to do story-driven and exciting stuff, but you don't have to do the last 10%.
Right, but but let's not kid ourselves. I mean, the stuff that's happening in episodic now is not what it was before.
Yeah,
I mean,
the bar is really
high, and I think the reason being is that people are watching a lot more good TV.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more great content that's happening on television. Just starting like with Game of Thrones or whatever is going on, and it's just really great stuff out there that I think people are seeing that is possible and it's entertaining, and then not everyone is interested in going to the movies to see that. They want to be driven by good stories.
But even then, we went to the Game of Thrones screening at IMAX.
Oh, here, really?
Yeah. And that was amazing.
But you went to the theater, right?
Yeah, we went to the theater, and I think that might be a thing. Yeah, if that would be shown every week on an IMAX theater, I would go for sure.
I would go for sure.
Really?
Definitely. Yeah, easy.
It was epic.
I love it. I mean,
that's an interesting idea. Like, what if there was, IMAX screenings of big shows every week?
Yeah.
No, but I heard that they made all the money that the conversion in the weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I think it's not a bad thing at all for them.
No. It's a good idea. And it's interesting because, I mean, obviously there's always this thing about Game of Thrones being one of the most popular ripped off shows on the internet. And that's because of the way that's because of the way it's being delivered, right? Because you have to, in the United States at least, You have to have HBO to get it, right? And so it becomes a comp. Not everyone wants to do it. Not everyone feels committed because all I want to watch is Game of Thrones. But what if you could say, if I didn't have to get HBO and I was just interested in Game of Thrones, what if I could experience it on IMAX once a week? That would be an amazing thing.
That would
thing.
Be super cool.
Yeah.
And no, I actually watch more television series than I watch films nowadays.
Yeah.
It's so nice. I like it. The long format, the character development. In, it's very exciting.
And I also, what's also interesting to me is that, that now, specifically because of things like Netflix, the thing that I saw at CES, as an example, was that everyone has these 4K TVs, right? But we're years away from a broadcast of 4K television because it's so expensive and so hard to do and everything else. But Netflix, right off the bat, they're ready to go. And the reason is because they it's just more bandwidth, right? So if you have enough bandwidth to your house, so the so when everyone was advertising their big 4K TVs at CES, or their Ultra HD is what they're called now, they would say, oh, you can get all your 4K content right on Netflix and then, you know, House of Cards right there and you can see it. So now the idea of when people say, well, why even bother with 4K because you can't get the content? Well, you can. And it's going to be out there through those types of services.
Yeah.
So I think that that's going to be really interesting. Have you guys done anything at 4K yet?
No,
or?
We haven't, fortunately. So, but I guess it's just
just a matter of time.
But it was really interesting seeing Game of Thrones because, that, I, as I understood it, it wasn't 4K. It was,
oh, they up-res'd it.
Yeah, and it looked awesome.
Well, I think, I may be wrong, but I think that IMAX, the company, has their own proprietary operating system. Which is very, very specific. And it was IMAX film, right? So it was true IMAX. It wasn't digital IMAX, right? So, yeah, that's and that's really kind of special. Those guys are kind of insane. When you shoot something in IMAX, right, and you have a film that's done for IMAX, every single reel that goes out to every theater is screened by one person to assure quality of every single print of the film. So they look at every print, run it through the projector, look at it, the whole thing, make sure nothing's wrong with it, and then they ship it for every single theater.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. Have you ever seen an IMAX roll?
Yeah.
Because
the physical roll.
It's about... like one frame is about the size of my hand. That's how big it is.
Like 70 mil or something.
No, it's bigger.
It's bigger.
It's like 135 millimeter.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it's the film itself runs horizontally. On two pallets. So you take a like a forklift and you put the film and it runs through that way. It's so huge. And I mean, it's beautiful. And that's why it does what it is. And, you know, it was very clear. I remember one of the Batman. When they shot, basically, you know, you could go from the IMAX to non-IMAX. And it's so clear. It was like, clearly this was shot in IMAX. Clearly this was in 2K.
Sure.
And it really makes a big difference, visually speaking. And that's something I think that still to this day, it's going to be a long time before you can have that experience in your home. Right now, people can get very good TVs, which can pretty much serve most of their entertainment needs. But if you want to have something as epic as that, IMAX still stands out to me, I think. Yeah. Well, cool. Let's see. Yeah, we're right about the right time. Is there anything else you guys want to do or talk about?
No, I mean, I'm happy. I think we have told
you a lot. Covered a lot.
Covered a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
great.
Stuff. Yeah,
well,
sure.
I will. I would love to keep a track with you guys, and obviously, we'll show more of your stuff as you come along. So please let us know the exciting things you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. And we will share because there's gonna be quite a few breakdowns of Constantine coming out.
Oh I'm really looking forward to that because that
with the later episodes.
Okay.
That done.
Great. Great. And when do you think those are, we're going to be able to see those?
Hopefully in like a few weeks from now.
Oh,
hopefully
perfect.
Hopefully like 2 weeks from now. It depends on the workload. And
we'll definitely let us know and we'll make sure to let people, to lead people to do that because we love showcasing that. So, all right, guys, I appreciate it. We're going to, I always sign off the podcast by saying I'm letting the last bucket drop, you know, like the VRA bucket. So.
Nice. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.